Hello, I'm Douglas Frank. I'm a member of Nalanda Bodhi Boulder, Colorado. It's our new name. And with me this evening is Susan Neumeyer, who's a member of Nalanda Bodhi, Colorado. And we are going to have a conversation. So thank you, Susan, for joining me.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
So I'd like to begin by just asking how you and John are doing during this period of time.
Well, both very well and not good at all.
Like how so?
Well, I think we really appreciated this time since Losar. It's been an incredible feast of Dharma, you know, with the open retreat and the month of Natarta. I'd had 3 months of studying with Elizabeth Callahan, Moonbeams of Mahamudra. There was the book club, you know, with the Heart Sutra teachings by Mitra Karl. And there's just been a tremendous, tremendous access to Dharma. That's been wonderful. You know, I'm practicing every morning with the Tara group out of Boulder. Seattle. That's a good
thing. So Dharma time.
Yes, but on the other hand, about a week before everything shut down, we started to renovate our basement. And it's still going on. And my basement is in my living room.
Okay.
The printer.
So it's going on. It's going on longer than you thought, it sounds like.
Yeah, about 5 months longer.
Okay. All right. So, is there an end in sight for getting your basement repaired?
Isn't there a slogan about give up all hopes of fruition?
Well, that brings me to a nice lead in to wondering, how did you come into the Dharma?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me about that, so I started thinking. And I went back to being a child and young adult, and I don't want to go there, but I want to start with a series of how would you say, coincidences, random occurrences.
Okay.
That when you look at it later, you realize, oh, that was a tendril, that was auspicious coincidences. And I'm going to show you a picture.
Okay.
Let's see. Here we go. Oh, where do we go? Well, let's see if we can find it. Share screen. Okay. There. I was walking with a friend through Golden Gate Park. I was living in San Francisco at the time after graduate school.
And what year would this have been?
Probably 1978. Okay. Yeah, because I'd gotten my master's. I was teaching at the community college and seeing this one person. And we were, I think this is near the Japanese garden. Anyway, I just came around the corner and I saw this. And I was experimenting with black and white photos. And I took a picture and I thought, wow. I still have this photo.
So this is a photo you took?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I still have this photo in my bookcase where my treasures are. And I just noticed it. Just noticed it. So then, I think it was 1 or 2 weeks later, I was coming home from work and I was tired, you know, probably low blood sugar. Anyway, I took the wrong bus. Usually I took a bus that went along the base of the mission. I lived in the mission. But this time I got on a bus that climbed up into Bernal Heights, which is multiple left. I don't know, east, west, or whatever. Okay. And not only that, but I started to snooze, you know. And then suddenly I woke up and looked at a street sign and said, oh, 17th Street, that's my street. And I jumped off. Except I didn't know where I was, because I was 6 feet or six blocks above where I lived. Mm. But there was this building there, this red brick building with big plate glass windows. And it said Dharma Dhatu. Mm. So I thought, Scandinavian modern furniture. So I went across the street to look. And there was this like shadow box, you know, thing, sign thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was just two hands in Anjali. Mm. And for some reason, that poster grabbed me.
Mm.
And I read the little print. And it said that on Wednesdays at, I think it was 6:30 or 7, they offered free meditation instruction. And it was Wednesday. It was about 5 at that point. So I said, oh, sounds good. And I ran down to my flat in the Mission and changed into my best sort of appropriate Asian, you know, black silk pants and a little Mandarin collar and little black shoes. Because, I mean, you know, obviously going to be Asian, right?
Got to look appropriate.
Yeah. And I ran back. And then I went up the stairs and I freaked out. And I went down the stairs. And I went up the stairs. And again, I freaked out because this is the time when there was all this publicity about a yogi or a guru in, was it Oregon?
You know, Rajneesh.
Yeah, yeah. So I was, you know, worried about cults. So this went up, down, up, down. Third time, I went up and decided, no way, I can't do this. I don't know these people. I'm not going to do it. And I turned around and I couldn't get down the stairs because everybody was coming in from the from work. And they were in, you know, San Francisco wool, like, you know, three-piece suits and high heels. I felt like an idiot. But anyway, I was swept upstairs. And Alden Jenks, a very, very tall musicologist, greeted me and said, do you want meditation instruction? I went, yeah, sure. And we went into this little room. And I don't remember now what he said. And I didn't remember then, a week later. But after a while, we went into the main shrine room. And I remember sitting there looking at the Great Eastern Sun Banner and watching a cockroach climb up. And so that kept my attention. And then the gong rang and I came out and I said to Alden, wow, you know, that hour went by so quickly. It seemed like 10 minutes. And he said, it was 10 minutes. You know, we talked for a while. And so then I was embarrassed and I just left. Mm. Never went back. Mm. However, about a month later, I was headhunted to a job in Texas, R&D firm to write a language test. And I went down to Austin, moved everything, left everything. And then maybe a month, 2 months later, I was taking an Alexander technique course. Mm-hmm. And we needed a book. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this bookstore. And I'm looking, you know, at the shelves, and there's this book, Meditation in Action. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been trying to meditate, and it wasn't going well. So I thought, well, this is what I need. I picked up the book, went to the counter, and the guy says, oh, you know, his people have a center here. And he points to the publisher's name, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. It's obviously the publisher, right? Mm-hmm. And then he points to this poster, same poster. And I thought, ooh, and I was so homesick for San Francisco. So I called the number and John Sell answered the phone. And he said, yeah, come over, I'll wait for you because normally we lock the door. And I thought, well, I'm not gonna go over there now, but oh, he's waiting for me. So I ran over there, go up to the third floor. It was the old house in Austin before we had the new center. And I walk in and, Jimmy D'Ambrosio is showing a tanka of a Mahakala. I have no idea what it is, and I walked right into that. And I never left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love the story of how you connected with the Dharma.
Yeah, it's a total coincidence.
It's a great story. Is there a Dharma teaching or a Dharma slogan that is your North Star that helps orient you?
Here's a 40-year-old piece of paper. Can you read it?
Hold back just a titch. Whatever occurs in the confused mind, see, this is parchment. Whatever occurs in the confused mind is regarded as path. Everything is workable. It is a fearless proclamation. The lion's roar. When did you meet this teaching?
This teaching and the calligraphy by Barbara Bash, I got probably 1980 when I came to Boulder. I was a kasam for His Holiness the 16th Karmapa, and I was exposed to the whole richness of Boulder at the time. And then later, I went back to Chicago, and when His Holiness Karmapa came there, that's when I met Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche. Mm-hmm. Only I didn't meet him. He stayed in my bedroom in the Sangha house, and I wasn't there. I saw him at the ceremonies. He was a little kid on the littlest shrine, or littlest throne, rather. Yeah. So I don't really remember anything other than little.
Short.
Short. And after that, let's see, that year I went to encampment. In 1982, I started Vajrayana practice. In 82, I went to seminary with the Vidyadhara. Mm-hmm. I got married there, pregnant. Mm-hmm. And my Nundro was, you know, the baby.
So that Dharma teaching?
Was my North Star.
North Star. In
impossible.
What's that?
Everything looked impossible, right?
Everything looked impossible.
And I just kept remembering, everything is workable.
Everything is workable.
Workable.
So
I don't know how, but it's workable. And especially now, I think about that.
So do you bring this slogan back into your mind on a regular basis?
Oh yeah, totally, daily. Yeah,
and what does this mean to you? I'm curious what this slogan means.
Well, whatever happens, it's not what you think is happening, it's your reaction, right? Mm-hmm. Your reaction controls your experience. All appearances are your mental experience. Mm-hmm. So I have a choice about how I'm going to react to what appears. And I can react with anger, despair, mm-hmm. Indifference, mm-hmm. or curiosity, mm-hmm. Wonder, like, wow, did he really say that? Orange man, you're incredible. Yeah. You know, it's understanding how we can't control what happens. You know, things are groundless. They happen. Mm-hmm. We can't protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. Things will fall apart. But we can work with our mind. Mm-hmm. And that's what's workable.
So was this slogan, so the first time that it gave you a sense that you could work with your mind in all situations?
Yeah, because I recalled it when I was at encampment and we were crawling along these rocks and I was afraid I was going to fall down the hill. And I kept saying, it's workable.
A very practical teaching. I like that. Yeah. So during this period of time that we're going through, how is Dharma practice sort of helping you navigate this period of time?
Well, you know, honestly, I haven't been practicing all that much. I practice every morning. but it's less than an hour. Mostly I study, and I've really, really been concentrating on the Bardo teachings.
Okay.
Because I don't think all of us are going to get out of this, quite frankly, you know? Death comes without warning, and I'd like to be prepared.
So by hanging out with the Bardo teachings, you're sort of giving yourself a leg up on case they come sooner than later.
Push up. Yeah. It's the Girl Scout in me, you know, always prepared.
have your Bardo Girl Scout knife.
Right. Like this.
Exactly.
What do you do?
What's that?
What do you do to get through this?
I'm practicing in general 3 25-minute sessions a day.
Ooh, nice.
And I'm studying. I'm studying the Uttara Tantra, and I'm also studying. I've gone back to look at the Pali teachings on the 37 dharmas that help with awakening. So I'm combining
37 practices of enlightenment. Yeah.
37 practices. Yeah. So that's what I'm doing.
Wow. Yeah. Also, members of Nalanda Bodhi can attend a Tara teaching, 21 Taras that happens. Uh-huh. And Colorado at 7:30, it's 6:30 in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And there's a group of us, about 10. One person is in Hong Kong, somewhere in the East Coast, most are Seattle. And we sing this wonderful, wonderful liturgy. It's so nice. And I think keeping Tara in mind is appropriate, very appropriate.
Like how so?
Well, Tara is taught in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition to be she who protects from fear. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, got a lot of that. And the green Tara as the central figure is the protectress. But then around the 21 Tara is the 20th is the Tara who protects from pandemics.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right eye shines forth healing. Mm-hmm. Shines forth destroying sickness, illness. Mm-hmm. Left eye shines moonlight, restoring with healing.
Okay. And
this is, you know, a very relative practice. It's it's how things appear. It's using the symbolism. Mm-hmm. But it's relaxing to imagine Tara, you know, wearing a mask and, you know, helping.
Right.
My daughter is a, intensive care pulmonologist. Mm-hmm. You know,
she's a frontline worker.
Yeah. Yes. Well, she's also administrative, so she's only in the ICU every 3 weeks. But, you know, for those, when she's there, she's incubating people and signing death certificates and keep trying to keep people alive. So we,
Well, it sounds like you said that you're not practicing. It sounds to me between your study and your Tara practice and that really are doing a lot with Tara.
I'm in my living room, which is a mess, and hoping that it's workable. You know, if that's practice, okay, fine.
Well, as I've heard, everything is workable. I've heard this before.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having this conversation with me.
Appreciate it
very much. And
thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell old stories.
Well, it's a good story. I love hearing how people come into the Dharma. and you have a really interesting Dharma story. I love, you know, it's like the photo that you took and then this unfolding sort of.
Everything happened because of something else, right? Because right. I was a student of Trungpa Rinpoche and served him directly. When his son said, go to Rocky Mountain Dharma Center to hear the this yogi, Kempo Sultan Gyamsa Rinpoche, even though I didn't want to go, I went. Mm. And, you know, that's the person I followed since 1991. And because of him, I began to appreciate DPR. And then he gave me my permission to study with DPR. And now I have these three masters.
So from Trungpa Rinpoche, all things are workable. What would you say is the slogan teaching from Kempo, if there is one?
Open, spacious, and relaxed.
Open, spacious, and relaxed. I love that. And what would you say from Dzogchen Pungpa Rinpoche?
So many things recently. Present moment. Now.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for having this conversation.
Bye.
That was a great story. I love that story.
Now you can stop the recording, David, and you can also, edit it later on.
Yeah.
To edit this part.
Yeah.